folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We've got a full house today as I look around. What's that? Who's that sitting over there with the hat on?
Without the hat on. Mike Cosentino is here, and Democratic Perspective has got an interesting perspective this morning. It's the kind of the eternal struggle of private property rights not in my backyard kind of thing.
Individuals' needs and rights versus the group, the larger communities. And Klaus?
Some people would take offense.
Because I'm not going to pronounce, I've been mispronouncing Klaus's last name, so I'm going to make him.
We do it on purpose because we want more money out of him. But some people would think it's naked greed would be the other thing we might be talking about.
I thought it was sheer incompetence, but... this is Klaus von Stodaheim. Good morning, everybody.
Yeah. What's the name of that movie, Knives Out this morning?
All right. I think we don't really have Knives Out, but Mike, why don't you introduce our guest? We have Steve was here just a couple, 3 weeks ago. Introduce our guest for our listeners.
That's true. Well, we have, ladies first, you need the microphone in order to speak in it.
Bev Jackson, Cornville Community Association President.
There you go.
Steve Estes, a Cornville resident and president of Verde Valley Land Preservation Institute.
And thanks for being back again with us, Steve. What's our issue today? Our issue today is for folks who don't know, is about development. So why don't you tell us what the issue is? There's a controversy brewing in our area. It's brewing even down where you are, right, Mike?
That's right.
Down Cottonwood. And it's about a huge development. And we talked about it when we interviewed people.
Donna, a
few weeks ago. So why don't you tell us what the story is?
Well, in a nutshell, the story is we have a 282-acre plot of land that is owned by the current Snowball owner who would like to develop it as a manufactured home and RV slot area with 2,500 spots of that nature, and then a 400-unit apartment complex and a 200-unit assisted living, making 3,100 total units on 282 acres.
And Cornville is a pretty rural area. What's the population of Cornville? You don't have official statistics, do you?
About 3,300.
And it's 3,300 people, and it's unincorporated. It's
That's correct.
Of the county. It has no local government. It only has county government and state government, the federal government, and so forth and so on. And it's a beautiful area. The river runs through it.
It literally
runs through it. Is the development on the east side or the west side of the stream?
It's actually at the beginning of Spring Creek.
Okay.
Which then is a tributary that comes into Oak Creek.
Spring Creek is if you drive along, or actually you have to hike along it, is dry most of the way, and then it comes out as springs fairly near Cornville. It's a beautiful spring. It's fresh. There's a reason it's called Spring Creek, because there's a huge spring and the water just pours out from underground. It's beautiful. It's directly from the aquifer. So tell us, why would you oppose them? The owner owns this land. It's private property, right? And you want to tell him he can't build these 3,000 units.
Who's the owner, please? Do we know the owner?
Eric Borowski.
Borowski, yeah. And he owns the does he still own the Snow Bowl, or?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So he's in that sense, he's local. This is not somebody coming from Texas or somewhere, right? Some corporation.
Correct. He lives in Phoenix.
Okay. And so what we're going to talk about really is balancing the rights of the Cornville residents, which I hear and we're reading in the paper are very much against this development, with his sort of property rights. And this is Arizona. So tell us a little bit about that. Why don't you want this development?
Oh, there are so many reasons, but the most compelling one seems to be the fact that this is a beautiful natural area that would be impacted by 6,000 people.
Yeah, so it would double the population of the area, and it would be a tremendous amount of draw on it. And for people who haven't hiked or wandered around there, there's several beautiful springs in that area that are hidden that most people don't know about. There's also some archaeological sites in the area that we don't tell the public about, because we've got people who damage archaeological sites, particularly rock art sites. They like to use ancient rock art for target practice or to put their names on or draw hearts with their girlfriends or whatever. So we kind of keep it quiet, but there's a lot of interesting things right in the area that sensitive things in the area that he wants to build. And tell us a little bit then about your association and a little more about why you're opposing it.
Well, the association is made up of anyone who resides in or has a business in Cornville. Until this particular event, it was a pretty quiet association that maybe had 20 people show up for a meeting. So obviously, I didn't anticipate 300 people at the meeting that we had in November, but that is in fact what we had.
And that's a huge percentage of the population of the landowner. And what are you doing to oppose this development? I mean, how are you going about it? You have to deal with the county. You don't have any local government that can say, no, you can't do this, and we don't have zoning that you have to do it. It's all county that you have to deal with. And for anybody listening from very far distance away, we're talking about a very beautiful county area in a very, very, very large county. It's as big as some states, right, Mike?
Absolutely.
So what are you folks doing to express your opposition? And then we'll go back. I think Mike can talk a little bit about balancing Bielowski's his property rights with the rights of the individuals to have an environment and how that works. Because that's an issue that, even if you're not interested, don't know about the local issue, it's certainly an issue that's nationwide, if not worldwide.
Well, I think it goes further than that, Steve, right? Because it's not just the right of the people, it's also what will happen to Spring Creek, and it's a tributary to
That's
Oak
right.
Creek. So there's some serious environmental consideration.
Right. And does the environment, since almost have rights, are we required to respect the environment, or is it something that's just a matter of legislation?
Well, yeah, this is the United States. I'm not sure we're required to respect the environment, but I can't imagine many people in this particular area not respecting the environment.
So why don't we just plow over all this stuff and build a parking lot?
Bev, I have a question for you.
Maybe
a little more directed here. Of those 300 people that came to your last meeting, did you have speakers? Did people step to the microphone to speak?
We certainly did.
Did anybody speak in favor of this?
No.
Not one?
No.
Nobody?
Nope.
That would be nothing?
That would be nothing.
Got it. Okay, I just wanted
Nor
to
have
it.
I heard anyone speak
in favor of it. I think Mike's taking this in the right direction. So tell us what's next. What's happening next in your opposition to this development, and a little bit more about why.
Well, we encouraged everyone at that meeting and have collected email addresses and continue to encourage them to write letters in opposition, stating their reasons, because there are many. And then we are also encouraging people to appear this Thursday at the county commissioners meeting and to wear red in opposition.
Klaus. Where and when is that meeting?
It's at the Cottonwood Yavapai County offices. I
6th and Mingus.
Thank you. And at 9 o'clock. It begins
and that's this
at
Thursday.
9. Yes.
Thursday the 19th.
Correct.
And you'd like people to show up for that meeting, and do you be allowed to speak for a few minutes, anybody who shows up?
That is up to the commission. I believe that they will allow anyone who wants to speak, but whether it is the typical 3 minutes in a normal meeting or whether it's shortened to 2 minutes because of the number of people who indicate a desire to speak, that's up to them.
And you're talking to who again?
We're talking to the Yavapai County Commissioners. Planning and Zoning Commission.
So if the Planning and Zoning Commission will rule on whether they're in, you have to change the zoning in order for this to develop. Let's explain that.
Okay, we all know the process. Right. Planning and Zoning will recommend to the full Board of Supervisors whatever their recommendation is, and then the Board of Supervisors will have to act on it.
And don't they generally follow the recommendations of the Zoning Commission?
Generally, that's true.
Yeah. And so that's your next step. This Thursday, you want people to show up, particularly, of course, people from Cornville to show up, property owners, people who live there, people who have businesses, show up at this meeting in Cottonwood and tell the Zoning Commission what they think, the County Zoning Commission.
There's been a few editorials written about this, and I kind of opened the show with the whole private property rights thing on purpose, just because, you know, people will start coming to the door with their weapons, and we can deal with that. But the idea is that there's only so much any association, any government, any group of concerned citizens can do. It mostly deals with zoning. That's why you're going to the zoning meeting to say, hey, the county has a certain zoning designation. We like it. We'd like you to pay attention to it. We'd like you to not change it. That's the citizen input, as far as I understand. Go ahead, Steve.
And it's right now it's one residence per 2 acres.
Correct.
Okay, and they want to change that to a high-density housing. That's the issue.
Well, not only that, I have to admit, what Bev outlined at the opening was kind of an extreme high density for 282 acres, 3,000 units. Come on, man.
That's less than half a square mile.
Okay.
Indeed. It actually mathematically computes out to a 2,100% increase in density, okay, and scale. And that's something I think we need to talk about is the difference between density and scale. There are a number of studies and a number of examples of very, very good development practices, sustainable, good for the environment, good for people, good for communities, that include density. But this density is planned. It's not just density for density's sake. And so the biggest problem with this particular project is that it has extremely high density, very small plots with very close, you know, homes very close to each other, and also parenthetically, these are alternative mobile home RV. So in theory and almost in practice, it could be that this could be 3,100 RVs that could come in for one day at a time.
Wow.
Okay. That's the way their plan is. So,
you mean if they change the zoning to what the developers want, that it's not fixed. It wouldn't have to be the exact plan.
This is their proposal, indeed. And so, scale is the biggest issue here. How big is it? How many people? I love people. I am one myself.
You're pro people.
However, I know my capacity to pollute. Yeah. You know, all you got to do is look at my recycle bins, absolutely. You know, and how many times a week I need to drive those darn things over to empty them. And I'm amazed at how much junk we just throw out. And that's just junk we throw out, not to mention human waste that goes into the ground, not to mention oils and manufactured products that we throw into landfills or just out our backyard so that they will dissolve. I mean, a lot happens when a person moves on to a piece of property, okay? And you put this many people to scale on a sensitive riparian habitat, you are asking for an absolute listen to me, ecological crisis. So not just for Spring Creek, but for Oak Creek and for the Verde River.
So I got two questions.
Sure.
Do we have the developers, do we have them identified? Can we do that? Make sure we know who they are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then talk a little bit more about how, whether or not they're amenable to your reducing their
Good point, because that's exactly where I wanted to go with this. They came to the Cornville Association and to subsequent meetings that a small committee formed to communicate with them about their proposal. They came asserting there are only two ways to develop this this 200 and some acre, what is it? 282 acres. One is to leave it at the present zoning, and then you will have the horrible, according to them, the bad outcome of 140-some individual homes out there, you know, drawing their own wells and using their own septic systems. You know, they're going to have a very good, you know, septic system, for the entire thing. And so that's supposed to be the betterment, you know, the better argument for their
You're
proposal.
You're paraphrasing the developers right now. Okay.
And so they came in saying that there were two ways to do it, their way, the way they want to, or just leave it as it is.
I see.
We came back and indicated to them that we have come up with a number of other ways, which I think now total five, that they could do this. I think one of the five is leaving it where it is. So they've suggested that. Okay. So actually, with their proposal, there are a whole total of six possible ways to develop this land. And not just to develop it, but to develop it profitably.
Right.
And the ones that we're suggesting, we believe, will come much closer, if not find community approval. And
so just to be clear, you're not saying no development.
No, we're saying
go away.
Go for it. You have, or you're a private property owner, you have rights, and here are what you have rights for. And one of them was to integrate the development into a vision generated by an upcoming regional planning process. It's coming up to do it better, to plan better for our development. Mm. Another one is to use the existing Yavapai County Ordinance 441, called the Open Space and Sustainability Option. This outlines sustainable development. They get a benefit of having higher density than the regular, as it is now, but they don't have to even change the zoning.
Uh-huh.
No, all they have to do is do this. It's already in the ordinance. And another one is called, I have the wrong numbers now because I... 442. I have both 441 here, and it's called the open space, open space and cluster and open space option. Okay, which is yet another way. And it talks about clustering. It talks about slope. It talks about swells. It talks about swales. I mean, and about how water will flow and how to be managed. And you do those things, you get the benefit of a much higher 1.5 to sometimes even up as high as two times what the normal.
Okay, Steve.
Thing
what
is here.
What would so, that Take this last one you're talking about. What would that look like in terms of giving folks a picture of it in sense of
very
are there clusters of housing in open space?
Yeah,
are there,
I have a very brief description here. The cluster in open spaces provides an alternative voluntary method for land division that encourages sustainable development and the preservation of open space through flexible lot sizes and locations of single-family residential dwellings. Preserves environmentally beneficial areas of the development site while allowing a much higher density, you know, for them to do it. As long as they use certain practices that are written deeply. It's very complicated, but they're written deeply into the ordinances. That's just one example. They both read similarly.
And this is great. This is the power of a Yavapai County ordinance. And it's an option for developers to not have to go through the zoning change process and yet have higher density. Not what we've been throwing around is the extreme density that these guys are proposing.
Right.
Once again, I'm still not clear on who the they are.
This is the developers we've mentioned.
Yes, and they are, to their credit, local, fairly local people.
Well, they're residents. They're
not some
residents.
Hidden... We're often, Mike, we're dealing with the ownership that has an ownership that has an ownership that we don't know where it finally ends up. It ends up in Edmond, Oklahoma, right. But it goes through Phoenix.
At the last meeting I attended, they stressed that they were not ELS.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
But they're not. So, no, I will give them, you know, and I will say that they come in professional, they come in, they're respectful, they're there to communicate, however they are very much sold on their outlook on this thing.
Two things. ELS was a developer of El Rojo Grande, or the potential developer of El Rojo Grande, county planning and zoning, shot that down after it seemed, once again, a large community outcry that went to the planning and zoning meeting. Now, but I heard the developer or the owner of the Snowball mentioned.
Yeah, he's not the full owner of the Snowball. They have partners, and he has sold off much of his ownership, but he still has a small.
This guy is used to protests. He's used to.
Yes, indeed. He is. Actually, they have emphasized in every meeting I've been at that they have taken the lawsuits surrounding the reclaimed use of City of Flagstaff water through all of the courts and have prevailed ultimately at the U.S. Supreme Court. And this has been underscored many times, and that can be interpreted any way anybody wants to.
I visited the Snowball, and this gentleman was on patrol there. He was on the lookout for any what do they call agitators, any outside agitators.
Really?
Yeah, it was
skiing agitators.
Yeah. Well, there was such a strong community feeling about using effluent to make snow at the Snowball.
Right.
That
I know the native folks were not happy with
native
that.
Native folks were not happy.
That is a sacred mountain. They don't even want the ski resort there.
People
right?
that supported the native folks were not happy, and they would express that unhappiness in sometimes maybe not so pleasant ways.
Yeah, I also hear that the city of Flagstaff has sellers or buyers remorse on this reclaimed water. The city of Flagstaff is a water-starved community. They do not have a good, sustainable water system up there to a groaning and large community that has a high water demand. And so, you know, they are not rethinking, but they're very dissatisfied with the outcome of this because they know they could have used this water better than to put into a recreational use. I have no problem with the recreational use of water, lakes, snow, everything else, but you know it needs to be balanced with what's best for the
sure.
society.
So going back to this development, they want a highly dense development. Now, everybody knows that developers come in, they want to maximize their profit mm-hmm. in a particular area, so they'll calculate whether they can build multi-million-dollar houses or they can build manufactured homes, depending and pack them in, depending on what's going to make the most profit for them. This is the U.S. This is profit-oriented. But
let's talk about that business plan.
It impacts the people all around them,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. And so, you know, just the business plan itself, which is, you know, the businessman's option, is to, build RV pads and mobile pads and then charge people a monthly rent. And they're proposing $600, $700 a month. Okay, so that's fine. So if you do the math on this, it comes up to somewhere near a regular. So they continue to own the land. They're not selling any land. Okay.
All right.
They're just, you know, being.
Renting.
They're renting parcels of land for people to put their purchased mobile homes or RVs on. Okay. They get a $700, $600 to $700. They say they're willing to bring it down a little bit. That's not our issue. Our issue is that they have a business plan that is not that. It really works great for them. They can make $21 million a year on rent alone. Okay? Well, he said, too, I could just sell the property for $19 million. You see? That's his cost-benefit analysis.
Yeah.
And so when you look at that, and I'm okay with that, but it's what happens to the community as a result of business plan. So he wants to develop the property driven by a business plan.
Just to be clear, this is the ELS business plan.
It's very similar. Yes.
Part of it is.
Yeah. Yeah, the same idea.
Plus the apartments, plus the assisted living. Okay, and then, so what I'm saying is that this is a business plan, which is in absolute conflict with good planning for the land.
Yeah.
Okay, and so you've got to strike a balance, not only you have to have a responsibility as a landowner to take care of your land, but you also have a responsibility to your neighbors.
Well, listen to Steve Estes, head of the Verde Valley Land Preservation Institute, and we have Bev Jackson with us this morning. president of the Cornville Community Association. And we're talking about the Spring Creek development, which is a big deal all over the valley. There's two developments coming in. The Italian village, I found, the Bellagio Italian village, just to, sure enough to confuse them. And but this morning, right now, we're talking about Spring Creek.
So I'd like to add just one more thing, Rip, just briefly. That bottom line is this, that you know, we offered all these other options, and they have through a lot of discussion pretty much let us know that those are not options for them. Just the two that they brought out were the
options. Based on your first discussion, you didn't come away with any feeling like they were going to listen to you.
It's hard for me to believe that 5,000 or 6,000 new people right around Spring Creek would not have a terribly horrible effect on Spring Creek, and then you know the other waters that it flows into. When I was there, the owners claimed that they would make sure that didn't happen, but to me that strikes me as virtually impossible.
Well, I don't know how you can control 6,000 people.
Right. So there would be 6,000 people doing 6,000 people things, whatever the official rules were. That's one of your concerns. Mm-hmm. How is this going to affect the rest of Cornville, Bev? I mean, how is it going to impact you folks who are living there? And Steve lives there, too. So what is this development going to do? Most of it's on the other side of the creek from Cornville, right?
Correct. In fact, the developer doesn't even think that this has any impact on Cornville and doesn't understand why Cornville cares. Honestly, he really doesn't. He constantly talks about the fact that Cottonwood and Sedona are closer to that property than Cornville Center. That is not our concern. We are not concerned about people from that development driving on Cornville Road and adding to the traffic there. What we're concerned about is 6,000 people dumped in one place and trying to move away from that place. What in the world, if we have to really let our minds go, what happens if a fire occurs? There's one road and 6,000 people, half of whom potentially are going to have recreational vehicles, large recreational vehicles to maneuver. It's a safety nightmare in addition to...
And they have to come out on 89A, right?
Correct.
That'd be the only,
and currently,
only
your fire
entrance.
Department is 9 miles away. That one, you know, that closest place.
Have you any... Has the fire department written a letter? Did they say anything about safety?
The chief tells me that he has written his letter.
Ah, good.
Okay, which fire district is it in?
Verde Valley.
Okay.
I'd like to add, just talk about public safety. You add, it would more than double. It would be almost be, it would triple the population. It doesn't happen all at once.
That's
it
right.
Happens
so
over some years. We understand that.
Yeah, let's be fair. This development will take over 5 or 10 years to finish.
So, but the deal is this, is that any time you increase the demand for public safety, you have to increase taxes.
That's right.
Okay. And people who've not moved there yet are not going to pay those taxes that are going to have to be the upload for more sheriff and more fire. Just to mention two of them. It'll be the burden of present residents. Okay, present residents. We're going to pay for that so they can do this. Right. So this essentially comes out to a secondary subsidy to the developer. Okay, they say they're going to build a fire station. Well, everybody knows you build anything. Yes, there's an upfront cost. Staffing it and running it over year after year, year after year.
That's on the taxpayer.
It's a whole other ballgame.
That's on the
taxpayer. That's a lot more to run a recreation center than it is to build one.
And in fact, they haven't said that they're going to build the fire station. They said that they've put an acre and a half set aside for that.
For somebody else to build a fire station.
Did they say anything about a school?
They don't seem to care.
I'm
serious. They are not putting a school on the property, and their theory is that the Oak Creek Elementary School has such a low enrollment rate that it could take any kids that are in this area.
They also expect a high proportion of... they're saying two things, really, right? They said, on one hand, they're saying this will be a residence for people who work in Sedona who can't afford to live there. And then on the other hand, they say that they expect 87% or 80% retired people. Those two things don't quite mesh. I don't know exactly what they're thinking or if they're thinking about it.
Well, and then the impact on Cornville, they're saying no impact, but what you just said, they expect the schools to absorb, because they're not doing anything about schools.
Even if it's retirees, I mean, if you calculate two, or you're calculating probably, Steve, three people per unit, you're still talking about a huge population increase over the next 10 years. Cornville's unincorporated, have no way to deal or regulate with this, right? I mean, you don't have any official legal, governmental, because you're not incorporated. I mean, people in Sedona are sympathetic, but they say, well, look, you know, Cornville should have incorporated. They should be have a little town there, and then they would be able to do something about this that is legal rather than just protest. So what's your answer to that?
Is there talk about incorporating Cornville right now?
Isn't the problem the tax base for incorporation?
Yes, that is part of the problem. One person on Facebook has said it's time for us to reconsider incorporation. They thought about it at the time that they were doing the Cornville Community Plan.
Sure.
It just doesn't have the tax base to do that. It's a rural area, and if your county government works the way that it should, we shouldn't have to incorporate in order to achieve our rights.
But county government in Yavapai County is pro-development everywhere. I mean, they generally start from a pro-development position, and then maybe they'll make exceptions to that, but they start with, let's get as much stuff built, let's build the tax base of our county, it'll make it a stronger county, have more population here. They're coming from a different angle, and you have to, I guess, ask for an exception to that general rule that they want to have what they consider positive development.
Well, indeed. Let me respond to that. Indeed, it's already exists in the present ordinances. There are ways to develop more robustly without having to change the zoning. It's already in the ordinance. And let's be reminded, you know, supervisors don't act on their own. They are our representatives. They speak for the people. And our district supervisor, Tom Thurman, is elected to speak for. And Tom and also Randy in our district. Yeah, they share Cornville. They are elected to represent our views. And so, you know, whether that is, you know, around development or environmental things or whatever, they are elected to do that.
I was speaking to a former county supervisor.
I wonder who that was.
And he feels like that perhaps what you're saying is absolutely true, that one or both of the supervisors you're talking about may have, I don't want to use the word stepped in a little bit, but may need to refocus their priorities on the community rather than the developers.
Well, I agree, but they also need to hear all sides. And, you know, they need to show all sides that they are heard. And, you know, that's important. But I think that when there's an overwhelming, you know, a response such as we're seeing in Cornville, that, you know, that is something that is amplified across the county and needs to be heard.
What about lawyers? Do you guys have, because the other side already has indicated they have no problem going all the way to the Supreme Court. They got lawyers and lawyers, and they got lawyers for their lawyers.
And frankly, the people we're talking to, one of them is a lawyer. They're one, you know, the family, the gal. What's her name? Lisa?
Lisa.
Mm-hmm. She's an attorney, and she's a former and has a specialty in land management.
What's her role in
law?
This?
Her role is the daughter of the father who is the main owner, and so she's a player, and she's very intelligent and again very respectful and professional. She's been a former Scottsdale city councilor as well. So these are sophisticated folks.
Now, is she helping lower the density, or is she on the density?
No, she is a part of the team that is in the developer. You know,
she's the daughter of the development team.
Okay. Well, I guess my point is
the former owner. You know, of the ski bump.
That this is going to turn on law. This is going to turn on planning and zoning and county ordinances.
Or are you trying to stop it before it comes to that? I guess is my question, doubling on Mike there.
Well, I think if things go the way we want them to go,
okay,
anybody could say, well, we're going to sue the supervisors for, you know, not treating us fairly or something like that. You know, they could. I'm not saying they will.
Yeah.
But I think the messages we've received is that they, you know, when felt like that they are backs against the wall, they will take any and all measures legally to protect their interests. I don't fault them for that. I just know that they're very good at that.
Right.
I think that's one of the background, Mike, is that these are people who are really willing to fight and have been very successful at winning law cases. So you're going up against people who are going to be very lawyered up and are going to make a strong case. They're not some hidden, with all these front organizations or front businesses, they're local people. People know who they are, and that's part of their argument is, you know who we are, here we are, we own this, you can see what we do. And we want to build this development. The general way this works, and I think we all know, is that the developers propose their maximum of what they want. And then the local people go, oh, no, we don't want to do that. And then there's a compromise that works out. And I think Steve has a series of different ways of doing it. But that's the general pattern. And when they go out, maximize what they want, and then they negotiate it down. And in this case, negotiating it down from, you know, thousands of units down to just 1,500 units would still be kind of a problem, right?
Well, that's half of what you're talking about.
Yeah. See, so even I think that would be even a problem, Mike, even if they got to negotiation, so they cut the development in half, it's still iffy.
Well, listening to Steve, it sounds like there are compromises available that wouldn't be so harmful, right, Steve?
Correct, and profitable.
So let's. What's the time frame on this? What are we looking at? Are we looking at a couple of weeks, a couple of months? It's come before planning and zoning once.
It's coming this Thursday, the 19th, Cottonwood, Arizona. What's the address, Mike?
The corner of 6th Street and Mingus Avenue. I'm trying to remember. I think it's 10 6th Street. Thank you.
And what time?
9 a.m.
So 9 a.m., folks, if you want to be involved in this issue, show up right where we're telling you in Cottonwood, and you can hopefully they will adopt rules so you'll be able to say whatever your position is.
And, in fact, I would suggest show up at 8:30.
Good idea.
Bev, wasn't it? I seem to remember reading something that somebody suggested that they wear a particular color of clothing to visually demonstrate their opposition.
Correct.
Am I right about that?
Correct. Red for stop.
Well, it is impactful to do that. For those of you that are familiar with the size of the meeting room, I think the last time or the times when they have big turnouts like this, they do set up a remote TV. So you can be out in the lobby and still follow all the action that's going on in the meeting room. And there's other places that you can and still get your turn to speak. But you do have to fill out a form beforehand before they will let you speak. I have to admit the El Rojo Grande was so well organized and they had such a good case. They had their speakers, almost assigned different parts. Mm-hmm. The county is aware of, so I'm not letting out any big secret here.
No.
They had a large factual presentation to give to the county. The county wouldn't let them. You got 2 minutes or 3 minutes, whatever you got. So each person took a piece.
Yeah.
And it was brilliantly presented in that way, I think. And the county got the message. Now, whatever they have going on, whatever you have going on here, whatever messages that you have, there's I think the other side because I saw an editorial already aware of this and it talked about one organization or one side dominating the discussion. If I was on your side, I'm not sure that's a bad thing. Your people show up, they got their part, they don't get emotional, they address the law, and you will prevail as much as possible.
In fact, that is the model that we're attempting to achieve. We are focusing on Cornville residents being the speakers as a part of this presentation, and we have used the assistance of that organization that you're speaking of, who stood up and said, we'll help you achieve this. Oh. But they have not dominated the process.
Okay.
They've done just exactly what we asked them to
just
do,
helped,
which was,
yeah.
This was successful in this, so you might want to consider it.
It seems like there's a disconnect between, once again, the developers and the residents, the protesters, or at least the people concerned about it, and that is it does affect Cornville. We already mentioned how it's going to affect Cornville. So, but their position has been publicly, it's not in Cornville, per se, whatever that is, by the way. Do you guys have clear lines drawn?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
86325.
Is it outside that?
No, it's in 86325, and that is our census-designated area called Cornville.
Okay, so
it is. That's a good point.
Absolutely. Right. That's the measure the federal government uses.
That does seem like one of the first issues to be decided.
It's decided.
It is in.
There's no argument there.
It is in, and it impacts Cornville.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You mentioned that the Rojo Grande organization really had a really good case, and indeed they did. Our case is equally good and in some ways better, particularly with respect to the environmental impact and the sensitivity of this. And also the experts from the various agencies at the state and federal level who have already sent in their notices of disapproval of this.
Who's disapproved of it in
the federal letters,
level?
I've seen letters from the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality.
Yes.
I've seen letters from the Forest Service.
Forest Service,
yep.
Right.
And I've seen letters from
Arizona Game and Fish.
Arizona Game and Fish.
Those are the three that I'm aware of, and they are unequivocal.
And they were responding, to be clear, to the letter of intent from the developers.
Exactly, yes.
So as soon as they saw the letter of intent to develop at the density these guys were talking about, it generated letters from these organizations that are concerned with the environment.
So we have 2 minutes, Mike. Why don't we reintroduce our guest and tell people, do you guys have a website? Do you have why don't you give us that information?
The website is cornvilleaz.org.
That's Beth Jackson.
CornvilleAZ.org. And they'll go there. They'll find information on this issue.
They will, in fact. The community plan is posted there. The ways to oppose are posted there. And when I leave here today, the reminder to come to the meeting will be posted.
And you have all the technical information or that Steve's talking about on it, or do you have to go somewhere else to find that? The variations that he suggested for the development.
No, we haven't posted that yet, but okay. We certainly can.
And I will note that those are posted on the county website. You can look up any ordinance you want there.
Mike. Yavapai is very good about their website has always been top-notch. Their IT is great.
I want to just one brief reminder that next week we're going to have a very thoughtful and woman who works in IT and is an IT evangelist, she calls herself, talk about automation, which will have a much more profound impact on.
You're switching subject. You're talking about the show next week.
Much sooner than we think. That's the show next week.
I'm really glad we're doing that.
Make sure we get that in.
We've always wanted to do more stuff on the impact of automation and AI.
Our next Democratic perspective is going to be on automation. It's taking everybody's job. We do want to remind you that you can find this information at vbid.org. All our podcasts are vbid.org. And please, folks, listen in next week. Thank you.
And there's a donate button.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZ. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.